That sound, that deep, resonant hum. Imagine standing there in an airfield, feeling those vibrations right through your feet as a piece of history taxis past. The smell of oil, exhaust.
It's powerful stuff. And today, we're diving right into that world through the eyes of someone who didn't just observe it, he lived it.
Exactly. We're exploring the firsthand account of Jules Wilburn Bernard. It's from a YouTube video, episode 13, Jules Wilburn Bernard on the Military Tales channel.
Right. And this isn't just, you know, dry history. It's his personal journey straight from him, hearing about aviation history directly from someone who was there. It's different. And the fact it's episode 13 makes you wonder what else is in that conversation, doesn't it?
It really does. And his life story, well, it covers so much ground, from being a kid fascinated by early planes.
So getting his hands dirty as an aircraft mechanic in World War II?
Right. And then years later, volunteering at a museum, even becoming an honorary crew chief on a B-17 recently. It's quite the arc.
It really is. What grabs you first in his story is how vivid those early memories are. He grew up initially in South Louisiana, but then his family moved to Shreve, Illinois, when he was about six.
Okay.
And that put him right under the flight path of these Martin bombers. This would be, what, late 1920s?
Right, around then. He remembered them flying east to west in winter following the railroad tracks.
Yes, exactly. Four Martin bombers, he recalled, each with two Liberty engines, flying low and, well, relatively slow by today's standards. About 90 miles an hour.
Imagine being 6 years old and seeing and hearing that. He talks about the sound, that deep drone.
Oh, yeah. That kind of experience, it leaves a mark. And it clearly did for him. It sparked this lifelong interest. He mentioned building model airplanes later in high school.
And following the newsreels about the Battle of Britain, sensing that the U.S. would get involved.
You could almost feel that anticipation building in his story, which leads, naturally, to him wanting to join up.
And the way he joined is kind of neat. The recruiter was a National Guard sergeant who also sold model airplane kits.
Ah, perfect.
Bernard knew he couldn't be a pilot, didn't have the perfect eyesight or the 2 years of college they required back then, but he was set on being a mechanic.
And the sergeant basically said, pass the test, you're a mechanic school. So that was it. He enlisted, got sent to Box Steel Field.
But his first taste of mechanics wasn't exactly a classroom learning.
No, not at all. He gets there and they point him towards two crashed Martin bombers from like 1932.
And his job, take them apart, salvage what you can.
Talk about hands-on training. Literally deconstructing these machines, you'd learn how they were put together pretty quick, wouldn't you? A fundamental understanding you just can't get from a book.
Absolutely. So that grounding, that real-world feel for the mechanics must have been invaluable. After actual mechanic school, he was in New Orleans.
When Pearl Harbor happened, December 41.
Then fast forward to March 42, he's transferred to Sarasota, Florida.
Right, joining the 97th Bomb Group. And they were a B-17 outfit, the Flying Fortress. Iconic.
So he's right in the thick of it. And then just a few months later, June 42, he ships out to England.
Uh-huh. And interestingly, he actually arrived before his squadron's B-17s got there.
So what did he do?
He started working on British planes, short Stirlings. Shows you the interchangeability needed, the cooperation mechanics were needed, period.
Then his B-17s arrived and he was back working on the fortresses, which included a pretty grim task early on.
Yeah, dismantling the first B-17 from his group to crash in England. Then, November 42, deployment to North Africa via convoy, stopped at Gibraltar.
And almost like deja vu, one of his first jobs in North Africa.
Was dismantling another crashed B-17, the first one to go down there, apparently after a wheel problem during takeoff from Peralta.
It really highlights the dangers, doesn't it? And how crucial the ground crews were, just dealing with the aftermath, salvaging parts.
Absolutely vital. After the B-17s, he spent about a year working on B-25 Mitchells in North Africa. Versatile planes.
Then later served in Akasaka and finished the war in Italy as a crew chief.
And his rise through the ranks was pretty quick, actually. He made crew chief, jumping from private to staff sergeant. That's four ranks back in England in 42.
Wow.
And then later promoted to tech sergeant in Corsica in 44. Being a crew chief meant serious responsibility for an aircraft and its maintenance crew.
He also mentions seeing air raids, like in Orange, Algeria, and the Germans flying over their base nightly in England, heading for steelworks nearby, a constant reminder of the war.
Yeah, never far away.
Yeah.
Which brings us to maybe his most famous story, Bathless Bernard.
Right. You have to understand the context here. North Africa, conditions were basic, to say the least. Water was scarce.
Extremely scarce. He talks about this one period living in a little pup tent, freezing temperatures. He went a whole month without bathing or changing clothes.
Unimaginable today.
And it was during this somewhat fragrant period that he had a run-in with authorities.
Ah, yes, the B-26 incident.
Yep. He was a staff sergeant then, working on a B-26 Marauder. And he disagreed with some master sergeants higher rank about how to do a repair, specifically about removing certain bolts.
He thought removing them would compromise the aircraft's integrity.
That's what it sounds like.
No.
He knew his stuff. So he refused the order to remove those bolts, sticking to his guns, basically.
Which in the military, refusing an order, that's insubordination. Big trouble.
Oh, yeah. He was arrested, faced a court-martial right there in the squadron. Things were moving fast with Rommel's advance, so it was handled quickly.
Yeah, and the sentence.
7 days of hard labor, digging a defense trench, in the freezing cold, sometimes sleet. Not pleasant.
But that's where the nickname came from, right? That month without bathing?
Exactly. Bathless Bernard, after the comic strip character Bathless Groggins. He seemed almost, well, maybe not proud of it, but he called it one of his measures of distinction. Found some humor in it.
Shows resilience. He even lost his crew chief status temporarily over that.
But got it back. Apparently, weeks later, the repair the master sergeants wanted still wasn't done right. And the CO basically said, okay, Bernard, you were right, and reinstated him.
Vindication. So after the war, what then? Did he stay with aviation?
Not directly in the military sense. Mm-hmm. He went to LSU, Louisiana State University, worked on the student paper as a photographer, which is interesting.
And that's where he met his wife.
Yeah, she was the advertising saleswoman for the paper. Apparently, she'd been planning to work for the State Department, but, well, plans changed.
Life happens. They had some adventures, too, didn't they? Fire lookouts.
Right. Summer jobs as fire lookouts in Idaho.
Cool.
He even did some dynamiting work up there, building a road they later drove on.
Wow. Then eventually they moved to Knoxville.
To be closer to their grandson, yeah. Family ties.
And that's when he started his long stint volunteering at the museum.
That's right. About 13 years, he said. Working on displays, mostly, because his eyesight and a hip issue made climbing around on planes difficult by then.
Still dedicated, though. Even needed friends to drive him there sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And his connections stayed strong. He mentions being friends with Stan Brock, getting invited to early D-Day commemorations. Part of that aviation family.
It's amazing to think his very first airplane ride was on his 13th birthday back in 1934.
In a Waco 10.
Classic biplane.
And then, get this, 87 years later, just a couple of years before this recording was made, he got to fly in a Waco 10 again.
Incredible, isn't it? Mark Hightower gave him the ride. What a full circle moment that must have been.
Truly. And the recognition kept coming. The EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, made him an honorary crew chief on aluminum overcast.
One of the last flying B-17s. He actually got a flight in it not long before the interview in October and was planning to see it again. His enthusiasm, you know, it just never faded.
So what was his advice for someone lucky enough to fly in a B-17?
Simple. Enjoy it, he called it. Let me see. Rattly cold, bumpy, loud, just shaking and wonderful fun.
Perfect description. Captures that raw feeling, the power of those four engines. Definitely. So Jules Wilburn Bernard's story, I mean, hearing it through this episode 13 recording, it's just this incredible sweep of aviation history lived by one person.
From seeing those early bombers as a kid to working on the most advanced bombers of WWII and staying connected right into his later years.
Yeah. And it's the personal stuff, isn't it? The Bathless Bernard anecdote, his refusal to compromise safety, that's what makes it stick. It brings history alive in a way facts and figures alone just can't.
It really does. These aren't just war stories. They're human stories set against that backdrop.
And for you, listening in, wanting to really grasp history, not just skim it, Bernard's account is such a rich source. It's that personal lens on huge events told by someone right in the middle of it. It's what makes exploring sources like this Military Tales episode so rewarding.
So thinking about Jules Bernard's life, his journey through flight, it makes you ponder, doesn't it? What does it really mean to witness history unfolding around you? And how do these individual stories like his, with all the grit and humor and challenges, truly shape our understanding of those big world-changing events? Maybe that's where the real history lies.